Welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I am Charlie Sykes. We have been waiting for this day for some time, and today marks the publication date for Rick Wilson's scathing new book, Running Against the Devil, A Plot to Save America from Trump and Democrats from Themselves. So thanks for coming back on the podcast, Rick.
I am delighted to be with you, Charlie.
And congratulations on the book. As I was just telling you, you are number one in three different categories on Amazon.com. This is obviously going to be a big bestseller, and a lot of people are going to hate what you say. You know that, right?
Knock on wood that it's a big bestseller. And I've gotten used to people hating what I say. I like to deliver the hardest of facts.
Well, this is incredibly timely, because this is basically a manifesto that you correct me if I'm wrong here. A manifesto directed at Democrats saying, "Do not screw this up. Don't blow correct. This. This is what you don't know about voters. This is why you lose elections, and this is what you have to do if you don't want to have a second term of Donald Trump." And it's a cry from the heart. I get the frustration, and the urgency comes through on every page.
I think that's exactly right, Charlie. The frustration that I have is that for years, Democrats have sort of pounded their heads against the wall and said, why did we lose in these places we should win? What's the matter with Kansas? Why do these Republicans, why do they beat us in places where we should absolutely dominate all the time? And, before Donald Trump came along, these would have been the keys to the kingdom. I would have never spoken these words outside of the eyes wide shut, Republican Party meetings. But now that Donald Trump is, I believe, a proximate threat to our country and someone who has the potential to destroy institutions and laws and the Constitution in a way that no other person in America could do, I'm speaking out very bluntly. It's a lot of tough love. All my love is tough love. And I'm telling them, chapter and verse, here's how we do it. Here's how to avoid it. Here's what you should do instead of doing the things that your heart tells you to do. Instead, do the things your head tells you to do.
Okay. Let's start off with the way we open the book, where you set a scene, and I think this is a great attention getter. You set the scene of election night 2020, and what it will be like for Democrats if they decide they're going with their woke id rather than pragmatically trying to defeat Donald Trump. Walk me through the nightmare.
The nightmare is basically something that anybody who worked for Hillary Clinton would be familiar with. They walk into the election night party, and slowly but surely the map doesn't turn blue, it turns red. And they suddenly see Trump squeaking out narrow wins in the places that they thought were in the bag for them, the places that they thought were going to be easy lift, no heavy lifting places that were absolutely going to vote for Trump or vote for the Democrat, suddenly turn to Trump. And this is a nightmare scenario, because they find out that Trump wins eventually a larger electoral college victory than he did the first time. And they still win the popular vote. So it is a cautionary tale, and it then sort of breaks down a few of the things they did, and it's written in broad strokes, fairly comedic strokes. But maybe it wasn't a good idea to put Bernie and AOC front and center for the keynote address to declare workers' solidarity throughout the globe. Maybe it wasn't a good idea to declare you were going to seize everybody's semi-automatic weapons, even though you don't really know what they are.
Taxpayer-funded late-term abortions.
Right. at every drive-thru.
Okay.
All these things that I warn them of, that their sense of complacency in this little short story, basically, is detonated very quickly.
Okay, so
and detonated very painfully.
I was channeling you. I don't think that I actually said these words, but I was on MSNBC the other night talking about Bernie Sanders leading in Iowa, suggesting that that perhaps Democrats had not become serious about actually winning the election, pointing out that I did not think that Bernie Sanders was going to win. And what I was thinking was the voice in my head was you saying that Bernie Sanders would lose 40 of 50 states. He would lose 40 states.
I think the number is actually closer to 44.
Oh.
I think the Democrats could win not a Mondale level blowout, but damn close, as close as you can get in this day and age with the size of the states.
So, Tim Miller has made this point. The Democrats claim that they regard Donald Trump as an existential threat to the future of the Republic, but they don't behave that way. And so today, we're seeing Bernie Sanders attacking Elizabeth Warren. If you go on very online progressive Twitter, the amount of vitriol aimed at one another, it's like a different world with the various purity tests. So let's talk about what Democrats need to know and what they don't know. Because what I was going to say was, so when I said this on the air, of course, I got completely flamed by all the Bernie bros who of course, deny this, who think that Bernie is the second coming and don't want to hear from anybody who is a conservative or Republican about this. And so there's a right. huge amount of resistance. I'm sure you get this on a regular basis, huge amount of resistance to hearing this.
Oh, yes.
And it is like in their heads, they don't have a good explanation for what you describe, this wipeout of Democrats at the state and local level. Inevitably, they're going to come up with, well, it's Citizen United, it's gerrymandering, right.
it's voter suppression.
Right, right.
There's a great, and I'm going to make my Democratic listeners' heads explode, but, as a guy who came up working in politics, in my very first big campaign, which was the Bush campaign in '88, our boss at the top was Lee Atwater. And, if you brought him a reason, that's one thing. If you brought him an excuse, you better just you're dead. So the excuses that they will make for themselves in the coming weeks are things, Bernie's going to ignite the base. If the Democratic base isn't already ignited by Donald freaking Trump, nothing will ignite them. And they need to make a hard decision. It's not the decision they want to make. I know what they want. They want to be in their hearts. They want to do the things that make them happy, that stroke their ideological happy place, and that give them that idea that America's just waiting, middle America out there in the red states, way far away from the coastal dominions, that middle America's just waiting for the peasants to rise up and throw the aristos into their trumbrils and wheel them off to the guillotine.
A bit of magical thinking there.
You and I both live well outside the Beltway,
mm-hmm.
and amongst the folk, as they say, and you and I both know that even the Democrats in places like rural Wisconsin and rural Florida are not that liberal. They are not hard progressives. They're looking for someone who doesn't scare the hell out of them. They would like to get back to business as usual. They were Obama voters, and it is a terrifying thing for me to consider that we're going to end up with a lot of Democrats who are angry if Bernie doesn't get the nomination and do what they did in 16, which is stay home.
Well, now people need to understand the perspective that you bring to this, because you are a longtime Republican operator, and you basically bring to this the mindset of what you could do to everything that the Democrats say. I'm not putting that very eloquently. So for example, you're looking at the Democrats, telling each other how great Medicare for All is and the Green New Deal, and you're sitting back going, here are the 10 ads that I can put together that will destroy the candidate that takes this position. And you're doing this based on the fact that you have done this in the past. You know why Democrats lose elections. You know which issues will lose them places like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida. So talk to me for a moment about how Bernie Sanders is the nominee, pushing Medicare for all, how the Republicans will handle that. What will they do? What would you do? What kind of ads would you run?
I'll give you an example of Medicare for all. And I had access to some focus group information when they first started making Medicare for all a test. And that response among suburban Republican women who voted in 2016 for Trump was to, but had left him by 18, who were horrified by 2018, was, oh shit, you're taking away my health insurance for my kids? Screw you. The other group that didn't like it, oddly enough, and this just shows you the political geniuses running the Democratic Party, that also means that union workers will have their private health insurance taken away from them. This is something they fight for like crazy, that they bust their tails to preserve in negotiations. And this sort of glib, like, oh, well, you'll be fine on the government plan. Even if that's true, let's argue the government plan is sunshine and rainbows and everything goes perfectly. They don't believe that. They're worried about it. They're terrified of it. They look at it as a threat to the stability of their insurance, and they don't want their kids to be on a government health program. And this is that gap of policy experts in the Democratic Party and guys like me who are trench historians of American politics.
And there's also the cost and the tax increases. I mean, I do understand that people don't necessarily vote their pocketbook all the time. But they're going to vote it sometime, particularly if they think that somebody is going to come along and set it on fire. Okay, so other issues that the Democrats don't seem to understand. And again, I'm cautioning the Democratic listeners to this podcast that this book is tough love, and it's written by somebody who said, if you do this, these will be the consequences. You argue that Democrats still do not understand how the gun issue plays in places like Florida, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin.
They really don't, and I'm sure once Shannon Watts hears this, she'll lose her shit, as she does every time I utter the word gun. But the fact of the matter is, they are still a massive signifier with voters outside of metropolitan areas, including white male Democratic voters. There's a group that Democrats have to decide whether or not they're going to keep, and that's white male voters. And white male voters are very different from the coastal elite opinion on guns. And rural voters are vastly different from the coastal elite opinion on guns. And I, like I said, I know Shannon Watts, her brain will explode when I explain this, but she didn't win Virginia because of guns. She won it because Virginians fucking hate Donald Trump. Time and again for 25 years, I've seen the Democrat come up in the polls and he's looking great. And then he gets onto this semi-automatic weapons ban or whatever it is. And you run into this silent rejection by a lot of people who do not live in the inner city, you know, and I've told this in the blue metropolitan areas. I've told this story 100 times. But Democrats don't even understand their own base. In the state of Florida, Andrew Gillum ran as a strong, passionate anti-gun guy. He wanted to ban semi-automatic weapons, ban AR-15s, ban. And on paper, that looks fantastic. Andrew Gillum never looked at the fact that in Florida's 1.7 million people who have concealed carry permits, 36% of them are Democrats. They never look at the numbers. They never understand this issue kills them.
And it's going to kill them again in places like Wisconsin. So what are the I'm all over the place here. Did I see a survey, an analysis recently that said basically that if you're looking at the Obama the Obama-Trump voters who voted for Democrats in the midterm, that if Democrats emphasize race and gender issues, they're going to go back to Trump. But if they focus on pocketbook issues like, for example, health care, but not Medicare for all, they have a shot. So what is the sweet spot for Democrats? I do know that there's a certain school of thinking that says there are no swing voters out there at all, but I think there are swing voters, and they're obviously swing voters if you look at the counties that Obama won twice and that the Trump won and that might have gone back to the Democrats. Clearly, just by definition, those are swing voters. So what do you recommend? What is the sweet spot for Democrats?
Well, the sweet spot for Democrats is this remarkable opportunity they have to run against corruption, to run as a party of economic fairness in a set of terms they're not used to using. And that is to say, we're not going to do crony capitalism anymore because we believe that the market is smarter than us. And Donald Trump is picking and choosing winners and losers. They get to flip the old winners and losers thing on its head. It's an astounding, astounding opportunity. They get to run on being a party that once again gets back to the fact that this is a country of enormous political diversity. I mean, the winners in their recent past, Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, actually ran campaigns that understood that this country was not homogenous. And the Bill Clinton in Massachusetts wasn't the Bill Clinton in Arkansas. And yeah, there's a little fakery there. There's a little bit of trickery there. But you know, if you're lecturing people on how they're not sufficiently woke, that'll be the last time you get to ask for their vote. And having that opportunity to go out there and to make arguments to people that are defying the Democratic cliche and defying the Republican cliche of what Democratic candidates represent is present because Trump has been so egregious.
One of the factors that I'm picking up on is just the sense that I can't vote for those folks because they despise people like me. They look down on people like me. And so the politics of contempt runs deeply. And they pick up some of these woke signals that there are words that Democrats use. There are postures that they take that basically say, this is not my party. These are people who don't understand or like people like me.
Well, the wokeness thing, and I've looked at this in a lot of focus groups, and this line stuck with me very powerfully. This is from back in 12, but close enough. Suburbs of Detroit, we get into a discussion about politically correct behaviors and things like that. And a guy in his early 50s, I'd say, said, I don't understand all the rules, but I know I'll get fired if I don't follow them. And I know they'll ruin my life if I don't say the right word about who's what gender. And there is a bit of punitive shaming on the part of the Democrats of people who don't play all the correct word games on all these things, who don't express the exactly correctly proscribed opinion by the Central Committee. And I think that has a political blowback on the chances of them winning in various races, and it's certainly not something that they want to give up. They like it.
So, in terms of just handicapping this, you know, you're looking at the stock market at virtually all-time highs, and yes, the stock market's not the economy, but it's the economy for an awful lot of people. Unemployment is at historic lows. You know, the economy is not growing as fast as projected, but it's growing. This is a good economy. It's a strong economy. People, we are not actually at war. We've stepped back from the brink of war. You look at that on paper, and Donald Trump should be cruising to re-election. Aren't all the fundamentals pointing to the fact that he's going to be extremely difficult to beat, even leaving out these other factors?
Every incumbent is equipped with a number of elements that make defeating them very difficult. Now, it's not impossible. It's not out of the question, but it reduces your window for errors. It reduces your margin for indulging in things that do not meaningfully impact your ability to win the race. And so that's one of the reasons this book is a fairly stern corrective on a lot of these things that I think is vital for Democrats to process just how bad things can go if they indulge their wishes and not operate in the sphere of politics itself. That's the thing, Charlie, is I come from politics. I don't come from policy. I am not one of the guys who sits there and writes 300-page papers on, you know, the grass carp mitigation program. I am a reductionist. I'm a get things done guy. I am an operator in a field that rewards only success. You got to go out. You got to win. There are no moral victories in politics. This is a political game of yes or no, one or zero, you know, win or lose. And so I'm hoping that Democrats will look at this book and you know, the pushback I've been getting a little bit from some more progressive folks is, well, you built this system. Therefore, you can't advise us on how to undo it. Well, that's a logical fallacy of the most whopping degree because, yeah, I helped build this system. I was one of those guys. And I am telling them that they will face this system. They will not face Marcus of Queensbury rules. They will not face somebody who goes across slaps you across the face with a white glove and demands satisfaction. There won't be anything civil about it. The Republicans that are working for Trump will stab them in the front, the back, the balls, everywhere. They will do everything they can to win. They will lie. They will lie every day. They will go out and they will say the most outrageous shit that will absolutely, the Democrats will lose their minds. Say, how could anyone, you know, do something so shameful? They feel no shame. They are like the Terminator. You cannot stop them with shame. You can only stop them by defeating them completely.
How is impeachment playing out here? You know, net, is it going to help the Democrats or is it going to help Trump?
Net, it actually helps the Democrats marginally as of right now. I think, and I've advised this, and the book ended. I had to turn the book in before impeachment and Ukraine started. Ukraine was a major factor in moving me from being staunchly anti-impeachment to being impeachment curious. And I do think a lot of the revelations have sort of cemented the clear understanding of the public mind that Donald Trump is dirty, that Donald Trump is using his office and manipulating his office in order to achieve personal gain and political gain. I think if that narrative continues, it's very good for the Democrats. I think if Mitch McConnell has a breakout in the Senate where he can't control the situation and you end up getting Bolton and Giuliani and others and Pompeo and others in the docket or in the dock, it could have a very powerful impact.
Now, you're part of this Lincoln Project, right? That is running.
I am running indeed.
Ads. You've had at least. I've seen two ads.
There are two ads out so far. Okay. One on the MAGA Church, the evangelicals, right. And another one on Cory Gardner, which just launched today.
And you're trying to basically to put pressure on some of these vulnerable senators to have witnesses. Okay, so your book becomes, let's just say, the run forward a few days, becomes a New York Times bestseller once again, becomes the huge thing, you know, creates this huge debate about, you know, how hard it's going to beat Donald Trump, what Democrats need to do. And Michael Bloomberg calls you and says, hey, Rick, I have $1 billion I'm going to spend. What should I be doing?
Well, for Michael should be registering voters in the 15 swing states identifying the book. He should be doing a massive data analytics project in those 15 states to start tagging and examining the swing Trump voters who moved in 16 from Obama to Trump in particular. He should be doing a endless, constant in Trump's face television barrage that goes at his and it doesn't even have to run anywhere outside of D.C. Trump just has to see it. Of things talking about Trump's poverty, his weakness, his mental instability, his stupidity, his impotence, his multiple wives. I mean, I would go after the personal side of Trump. If I was Mike Bloomberg and I had a lot of money to spend, because Trump can't stop talking about an insult. He can't ever get away from anyone or anything that, that he perceives has dissed him. But the more important part, again, the voter analytics project and the voter registration project, particularly in the swing states, you know, if I were Mike Bloomberg and I had $1 billion I was going to throw, I would go and spend $30 to $50 million in Florida, finally doing what the Democrats should have done in 2016, which is registering and activating the Puerto Rican voters who have moved there. 350,000 of them moved there to Florida. They are U.S. citizens. They are American voters. The Democrats had a Potemkin village last time where Hillary Clinton's people spent, you know, $100,000 and said, oh, we got it. It's in the bag. That is not how you win it, those voters. So all those things combined, you know, are a start. But, you know, it demands a lot of discipline on his part, because his ego is in this game right now.
Well, that's the problem. And I was very critical when he got in the race, because I didn't think that we kind of needed him at that moment. But on the other hand, if in fact he's going to spend that kind of money up through November, it could be a game changer. Of course, the big question is, if it is Bernie Sanders or if it is Elizabeth Warren, will they accept that kind of support from a billionaire? And will he be willing to do that? I'm having a hard time imagining Mike Bloomberg spending all of that money to elect Bernie Sanders. And I'm having a hard time imagining Bernie Sanders accepting it. Why did Cory Booker not ever get traction? Because in a lot of ways, he represents what you're talking about, a guy who was aspirational, the coalition of the decent, somebody who wants to unite the country. He was smart. He was charismatic. What was he not?
Well, he was not able to break out of a pack of way too many candidates who had absorbed every bit of oxygen in the room. I mean, the Bernie and Warren Prague fight that's been going on forever and ever is one that, you know, was only going to end in other people being shut out and ignored. Biden is kind of in his own lane, but he gets a certain amount of press just because he's Biden. There was a long run of Beto mania that blocked Cory from rising. So these are chess games that are not always amenable to a simple, you know, pathway to getting into the debates. And, you know, that Cory just didn't raise the money, didn't pull it off. I did hear that his campaign spent $44,000 on a Subaru.
Great.
Which I'd really like to know where that went.
So if you, Rick Wilson, could magically say which of the Democratic candidates is most electable, would fit your template here, who would it be?
Well, because the race must be a referendum on Trump, it's not about policy. It's not about ideology. It's a referendum on Trump. You need the person who's the strongest fighter to post up against Donald Trump as a human being. And while I say this a lot, and I mean it, I'm not trying to pick the Democratic nominee. I'm really not. There are a couple that I thought were absolutely disqualifying, But I'm not trying to pick the Democratic nominee. Joe Biden is the guy closest to that description for all of his many, 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 many flaws. And name ID is a super powerful factor in this business. Name ID is enormously impactful in an election. And people have pulled a national ballot with Biden's name on it twice.
Okay. What about Amy Klobuchar?
I have a great degree of affection for Amy Klobuchar. Anybody who doesn't put her on the VP shortlist is a fool. She's scrappy. She's got a little bit of an edge to her. She's from the right part of the country, the part of the country that Trump surprised Democrats by overperforming in a meaningful way. She's stuck in Iowa about 6%. She doesn't have a ton of money. I met her last year down at the Trib Fest in Texas, the year before last, and I was very impressed by her. I thought she was very, she's very plain spoken. And I think there's a part of her that gets some of the cultural disconnects that you know, the coastal Democrats don't necessarily understand as well.
Okay, so I was reading an early excerpt of your book. Well, I've actually read your book, and I should disclose I actually wrote a blurb for your book. So I've already taken a position on this book. But in the Daily Beast, you wrote that if Donald Trump gets reelected, get ready for President Donald Trump Jr. Seriously?
Yep.
Really?
Look, he will win Donald Trump Jr. will win the Republican nomination. They don't care about anything else. The Trump base cares about the Trump name and the Trump family. They have become a royal family in this new political party that used to be the GOP. And because they've become a royal family, and because the base only cares about Trump and Trumpism, he will seize that nomination. All those guys like Marco and Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, who thought they were going to be the next, they will be standing there stunned when Donald Trump Jr. says, "But you said this bad thing about my dad." And the Trump base does what the Trump base does, which is rally around the Trumps. And
so it's Trump forever. It's Trump all the way down.
Right. And if they make it through this election, it means they've broken our system so fundamentally that the next Democratic nominee, you know, if they pursue the same strategy, will lose again. And, you know, it takes a lot to stop touching the hot stove sometimes. But, you know, the pain stops when you stop touching the hot stove. I don't know that the Democrats right now have suffered quite enough pain yet to stop touching the hot stove.
Yeah, that's the question. Going back to the question of why they're not acting more, if they really, really, really thought it was an existential threat, why are they indulging so many of their own quirks rather than being as focused as you argue in this book they need to be on saving America from Donald Trump? So, Rick Wilson, again, congratulations on the book.
Thank you,
and best of luck. It is Running Against the Devil, a plot to save America from Trump and Democrats from themselves. And the trick here is getting Democrats to read this book as opposed to doing this, well, he's a right-wing functionary who built this. This would be a little bit like, you know, if you're playing the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl and, you know, one of the assistant coaches comes over and says, "Hey, would you like to know how the Patriots won all these Super Bowls? Would you like, you know, some insight into the way they think and the way they've won all these games?" "No, we don't want that. You're the enemy." Well, that's basically what you're doing here, isn't it? I mean, saying this has been the roadmap. This is why you guys have lost this election. And if you do it again, why you'll lose the election again.
Charlie, that's exactly right. And I make an analogy in the book where, you know, during the Cold War, when a Russian general walked in the door of an embassy with a briefcase full of secrets, yeah, they checked it out. But I think the last 3 years have verified I'm not some secret Trump sleeper.
Yeah.
But the value of the knowledge is always there. And I hope that the book is something that people can get past their hatred of the Rick Wilson mythology and focus on just how important it is to defeat Donald Trump, no matter how uncomfortable I am with the outcome.
Again, Rick, thank you so much. This is your 8th appearance, by the way, on the Bulwark Podcast.
Woo-hoo!
Eighth appearance. And thank you for listening to today's Bulwark Podcast. I'm Charlie Sykes. We will be back tomorrow, and we'll do this all over again.